A new episode of How She Went Global begins right after this.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Blue Dog Design, a growth consultancy that helps business and marketing leaders make the decisions that matter. In our complex world, building a sustainable future for your business, stakeholders, and the planet can be an enormous challenge. Blue Dog works with leaders to clarify what matters and make confident decisions together. With a 93% client retention rate, getting to know Blue Dog will be a good decision. Learn more at bluedogdesign.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to How She Went Global. I'm Laurel Delaney, president of Women Entrepreneurs Grow Global, and your host. Today, we have Katrina Markoff, CEO of Vosges Hot Chocolat with us. Our topic is how chocolate can raise your vibe. Katrina is founder and CEO of Chicago-based Vosges Hot Chocolat, a luxury chocolate company that creates awareness of other cultures through the medium of chocolate. Vosges Chocolates features indigenous spices, flowers, roots, scents, and other ingredients that Katrina has discovered in her travels around the world, which allow people to open their minds, spirits, and palates to new ideas. Katrina launched her company in 1998 while working out of her Chicago apartment. She's grown the business to more than $30 million in annual revenue, with more than just slightly over 5% generated internationally. Katrina has received numerous awards, from being named one of the top 100 most creative people in business by Fast Company to Fortune Magazine's 40 Under 40 to the designation of the innovator in chocolate to lead the U.S. through the next 30 years by Food and Wine Magazine. Vosges Hot Chocolat was also named one of the 10 best chocolatiers in the world by National Geographic. Hello, Katrina.
Hello, it's so nice to be with you, Laurel. Thank you for that intro, totally.
You and I have known each other, you know, for a number of years.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm not at all surprised to see what you've accomplished, Katrina, but one of the things that is always to this day that's fascinated me is that you originally studied chemistry and psychology at Vanderbilt University. So how did you go from that experience to starting Vosges?
Chemistry has a lot to do with food in many ways. You know, you're changing states of matter from, you know, solid to liquid and playing with temperature. And so I think that coupled with the fact that I wanted to have impact and I had a cooking, like I had a little cake company in high school, I think all of those things melded together to kind of push me into wanting to go into culinary arts. And so I moved to Paris right after graduating and traveled, you know, extensively, and then realized I didn't want to be a chef and came to see the power of chocolate, of cacao. And it was more than food. So I think that's what drew me into it.
Were you always, you know, were you a diehard chocolate lover? Like even back
then? No. I wasn't. I didn't even like chocolate as a kid because I didn't have access to good chocolate. You know, I just had like drugstore chocolate and I wasn't like so interested in that. Like if I had chocolate, it would be because it was around like a caramel nougat center or something, but never because I wanted to eat the chocolate. That didn't happen until I went to culinary school in Paris and I had this, you know, this amazing sort of immersion into the foodie world and into bittersweet chocolate, because in France they like it more bitter. I went to this really lovely Michelin 3-star restaurant and they took out these truffle beignets that they had just fried, and they said, okay, you have to eat it right away because inside was liquid molten chocolate. And that was like the first time I felt like, oh my god, chocolate is a real experience. I've never had anything like this. Don't want any burst of liquid chocolate in my mouth, like whoa. And that is kind of where the intrigue kind of started to think, oh, maybe it's not so bad. This is kind of interesting, actually.
One of the things that I always think about when you start up a business is the first thing, you have the idea And then you start, the process of thinking about, some of the products and how you'll actually put, the products into place, so to speak. But funding is always a big issue. Mm-hmm. Did you have funding when you started your business at all?
I started actually with a partner in the first, 3 years. And we both kind of just put in little bits of money, about $15,000 each, when I got mine just from my mom. And she had always had a little investment account that her parents had started for her. And so that's kind of how we got the seed money to begin. And then once the business actually had revenue for, about a year and growing, we were able to get the first SBA loan. And that was really, really helpful for, ultimately it ended up being like $200,000 to open another store. And from there, the business kind of just grew and we were able to collateralize, I was able to collateralize any future financing, really just through kind of our business cash flow.
Right. And I've always looked at the SBA as like a godsend. And then back then, Katrina, what about Neiman Marcus? I try to imagine you going into Neiman Marcus and convincing them that your chocolates are just out of this world. If you can remember, I don't know if you can go back.
I can.
A lot of incidents that for me are quite memorable in my life. How did you convince them to buy your product?
Well, I went in with my shoddy little, Ballantine box that was just a stock box you could buy on, online, and a organza ribbon, which I would never use now, and my little booklet that I had printed at a copy shop, and told the stories of each chocolate. And I had a connection to the buyer. I knew somebody that was a friend of him, not very close, but anyway, I got the meeting and I just remember him looking at me like, just passing time, waiting for me to go. And I thought, oh, I don't know if that went so well. But then the next day he called me and he said, I don't know what you did. I just put those out in the break room. But everybody came up to me and said, these were something we should carry and amazing. And so can you come back? And I was like, okay. He's like, well, if you will agree to sample, I'll agree to sell these on consignment. And I'm like, okay, I'll take it, whatever I can get. And that's really how it started. And we sampled it, we sold it. And eventually, we started to upgrade the packaging, and Neiman Marcus was like, well, if you're going to be in Dallas, you can do a demo there and let's see if it can sell there. And I just kind of worked from one Neiman Marcus to the next. And that was in the days when there was, they had an Epicurean department. That was, those were the early days, and I really wasn't that presentable, but the product spoke for itself. Thank goodness people saw beyond the packaging at that time and was able to grow with them for many, many, many years. We still sell to them.
So after that happened, did you then say to yourself, I'm on to something?
Yeah. I mean, I had a very strong knowing that this was going to be, I could see it. I could feel it in my body without even my mind registering it in a way. It was just like a heart intelligence or something. I saw the future. Like, I knew what this brand would be, could be. It was almost like a calling. It was so wild. I was at the time really true to my gut. Like, I would look for signs in my life all the time, and I would translate them for myself in my own sort of meaning of what that meant, that that was. And so I used that, sort of implicitly to do all my decision-making in the beginning. I went a little off track in the middle part, but then I got back on recently.
Yeah. I think a lot of entrepreneurs, business owners have that gut feeling where, it drives them forward. So it doesn't surprise me. The feeling that you had, like, all along, you knew that this was going to work, so to speak. But again, back in time with Neiman Marcus, do you remember what product you actually sold to them?
Well, it was the truffles, and those only last 2 weeks. So we would basically kind of be at Neiman Marcus servicing their counter often, because it was such an important value building, brand building account. We wanted to, I really wanted to have like this very strong luxury, super, super premium gifting experience. So then it really, yeah, it was the truffles and then eventually became some bars too. But the bars really took off at Whole Foods because they didn't have high-end specialty chocolate bars at Whole Foods. And this was the first time they had had that. And that was, you know, it was also quite radical the way we were doing, you know, the different ingredients with the chocolate, which had not been done yet, you know, wasabi and chocolate and curry and chocolate and all these things. So it was pretty radical, but for some people, you know, Americans in general are very adventurous, you know, it kind of caught people's eyes. And then coupled with my background, having, you know, gone to the Cordon Bleu and worked at El Bulli and traveled and worked at a lot of different restaurants, it sort of built the story of like, well, this has to be kind of credible, you know, to just break into these places like Whole Foods and Neiman Marcus and Dean and DeLuca at the time. So yeah, it really, you know, it sort of started with the truffles there. And that has always been kind of our core product for the gift experience.
You're driving incredible results, you know, internationally. For example, I know you're becoming part of a big food hall in China, and it's equivalent to Harrods in the UK. And at the same time, you're setting your sights on cracking Asia and the Middle Eastern markets.
Yeah.
So, you know, all of that makes sense, particularly in that part of the world, because the consumers out there, I think they're really into luxury brands, you know, such as Prada, Burberry, LVMH, et cetera. But tell us about those plans, because it sounds super exciting.
Yes, it really is. I mean, our brand is positioned as a, you know, true luxury product, beautiful for gifting, the purple boxes and the beautiful bows. And we've been trying to work on a deal in Asia for some time, starting really with Japan, but this opportunity came up in Macau, where they're building the largest food hall in the world, as you said, and it's definitely going to rival Harrods. And it was a really cool opportunity to do it's really like a licensing agreement with rights for audits and creative input and service input and stuff like that, which allowed us to do it without putting in a lot of money, especially in the period of COVID. And that was super, super helpful. I think because it's an epicenter for gambling in Asia, you'll get so much exposure from that region of the world, and it'll be positioned in a very luxury way. It's stunning. And we're doing our first elixir bar there, where we'll be selling these cacao elixirs that are made with no refined sugars on tap, on nitro, can be heated as well. But really interesting focus on, you know, it's like 5 or 6 different flavor profiles on sort of the origin of cacao as a beverage. And so one version is just black and quite, you know, it's got all the tannins and bitterness of cacao, almost as a replacement of coffee. And so we're exploring, you know, that idea. And then from there, being able to go into Hong Kong, and then we'll see, you know, where we go from there. But that's kind of the launching pad. And we've got some opportunities also in the Middle East to just go into really beautiful, beautiful, very high-end, almost vanity hotel projects. Because there's such an appetite for luxury in those markets, it's our brand plays very, very well. And so that's our focus, to have 5 global footprints in the next 3 years.
Just, you know, for clarity purposes, I heard you say, you know, licensing. Are you thinking of just licensing the name and having someone produce the product out there?
No, we will make everything and ship it from here. Okay, once the volume gets really big, we can explore, you know, ways maybe to produce in Japan. And I'm not sure yet. You know, you got to be really careful with your intellectual property, both, you know, recipes and brand. And so I'm hesitant to allow anyone to make the product. So it works well for us to be able to just ship from here and go there. That's the plan, not to co-pack anywhere at this point.
Got it. And then do you have a goal in mind for your international sales growth? Let's say to move from currently to about 5% to up to 20, or, you know.
Our overall business is growing as well. So like, you know, as that top line grows, the percentage is, you know, you're chasing it a little bit, but probably somewhere between, you know, 10 and 20% of the business to be international I think the potential is really, really quite large also with even some duty-free opportunities or airport opportunities once the world gets back to moving around more. We will sort of revisit, you know, that part of international as well. But I think it could be a very big part of our business, maybe even grow to be majority if we manage it properly. It's just a little bit unknown with COVID how things are going to, you know, manifest back in the travel piece.
In terms of finding new customers, specifically in Hong Kong, China, Dubai, for example, do you plan to look for, I call them importing wholesalers or distributors in that market?
I am less interested in doing the wholesale piece because I want to really focus on building the brand ethos by having, direct to consumer connection in, as opposed to like just putting it through a distributor. Now we are interested in doing cross border e-commerce. And I think we will do that with our partner there and not engage, another, distributor. I don't want it to go just anywhere. I want it to basically control the relationship through the e-commerce channel and through the direct store.
Did you start to expand your business internationally because you traveled worldwide and you were sourcing the ingredients all over the world? Or was it the demand that you were noticing from consumers all over the world?
It really was the demand and people reaching out to us and asking, how can we get your product here? And we do have a good amount of a customer base that we ship to. It's just so expensive to ship to Europe and of course Asia and Australia. So we were getting so many requests, and then a partner that we had worked with in London brought this project to us and said, hey, would you be interested? It's going to be very high profile. They're really wanting to do the best of the best. And I was like, absolutely. It just kind of came about organically like that. And we just sort of explored it. And then simultaneously, we had the same kind of reaching out from some groups in the Middle East. So it's really been an opportunistic sort of play, because it's not like I've been looking for a partner extensively, but it just kind of naturally happened. That being said, I really, really want to focus on this because I just think there's a lot of appetite for this luxury consumable goods in China and in Asia in general. It's like a $10 billion industry. So I think it's a great play for us, especially as mainland China learns more about what chocolate is and an appetite for it. There's a big opportunity there.
Oh, absolutely. So agree with you on that. So let's shift over to talk about the healing power of chocolate and rituals. I know you're keen on this, and I caught this from your website and was fascinated by it, where you had indicated rituals are the bridge to connect mind, body, and spirit, creating deeper meaning and alignment with source energy. When we radiate with this trinity through eating chocolate in purpose and intention, the everyday becomes extraordinary.
Yeah, so this is a very alchemical concept. The idea of alchemy is basically, the path of personal transformation. It's science and it's spiritual, but the way I approach creating food, creating chocolate, these collections, is by really energizing them into something different than what they may seem to be. And how I do that is a lot of the storytelling and the intention setting. And yes, we do cleanse the space that we make them in with various smudging, and we infuse the chocolate with a healing sound frequency, 528 hertz, as it's crystallizing in the cooling towers. But really, it's like the intention of putting, like they say, heart, head, and hand into any product. You're basically energizing it, and by energizing it, it has a whole new meaning. And when you look at the history of cacao, I always love to talk about the Mayans because I love how they did cacao ceremonies. I mean, they believed cacao was food of the gods, a gift from the gods, and they would have rituals, sometimes daily, sometimes monthly, to lift their energy, raise their vibe into their heart space. So a lot of times we get stuck in some of our thoughts and some of our worries and fears. And they would say when you had cacao, those fears would sort of dissolve and you would go into this open heart space where you could love and forgive yourself and also be open to loving and forgiving other people. And that the mind would also open to receive sort of the divine messages from the above. I believe, and I kind of learned this through my own gnosis or experience of it, is when you eat something like chocolate that people think is, you know, usually like fine chocolates, like people are dainty with how they touch them and they're careful and they kind of stop and they look and then they take them slowly. When you're working with something that already has sort of that power or that pause, and then you put interesting ingredients in it and an interesting story, you know, it creates people to like be even more present. And the way we tell people to eat chocolate is by, you know, starting by kind of opening up all their sensors, by closing their eyes and taking three deep breaths, relaxing their shoulders, breathing in all the way down to their hips, all the way up to the top of their heads, and then opening their eyes. And when you do that, you tend to have a lot more sensors opened, a lot more sensitivity. And then tasting the chocolate, you know, by looking at it in a fascinated way through all of your senses and then having that experience, I believe leads you deeper to your own inner voice or that own, your own divine wisdom that's inside you. And I've been saying to a lot of people, this is after you do a tasting like this, this is the perfect time to ask yourself a question, to write your dreams and your goals bigger than you can ever imagine, like really put the energy into it. And so we have different rituals now for self-love and prosperity and joy and peace and all these different things, because ritual energizes something to be more special in the body. So when you do your routines day to day, you do them, you know them, it's by heart. But when you say like, I'm going to do something a little bit more special, I'm going to put on a different outfit, it's like going to church or something, you dress up and it sort of signals to the consciousness like, oh, we're doing something special here. And so the same thing with your day to day, like how can you create ritual around eating your chocolate to be able to manifest what you want in your life? And as maybe far out as that sounds, like it really, really works. It really does. And it helps reset in a day when you can kind of get carried away with the fires that show up, to be sort of grounded in something that's so delightfully delicious to taste. You know, it's easy to get people to do it this way.
Have your sales jumped up during the global pandemic? Because when I listened, I just found all of that so fascinating, Katrina. Mm-hmm. I think of rituals and I think how important, how essential that is right now.
Yes. I mean, we have found that people are really resonating with this type of content. They really need it. And it's almost like when you're doing it with chocolate, it's not a chore to do it. It's fun to do it. So it makes it more welcoming for people.
Right. I mean, like so tonight I'm going to light a candle and I'm going to have some Vosges chocolates. And I'm going to be reflecting. I'm going to have my gratitude journal. I'm going to write down what I'm thinking and things to open my mind, to open my heart. So this all, I think, is just so relevant, not only right now, but always, which yes. leads me also then to the strength of, you know, just healing power in general, in that, I don't know if the listeners are aware, I'm aware, Katrina, that your husband was recently struck with just a terrible infection and is still recovering. And, you know, how has that impacted the way you look at life in general and how you run your business now?
Yeah, I mean, that had a huge, huge, huge effect for sure. I didn't work for, you know, 6 months. It was very urgent in a situation where he got, he didn't have a spleen and he got very sick with an encapsulated bacteria infection and was really, you know, as the doctors would have had it, to die. And I had this really incredible experience with that where I just wasn't going to have it. And I don't know, like it was one of those moments too, where I just knew like that wasn't going to be the way it was going to go. And I just knew we had to keep fighting for him and keep being, you know, sort of find the light in the resistance. And in the process of being a fierce advocate, like fierce in a way that I haven't ever remembered being, I actually found my own power again, my own essence and the confidence in it, because I had kind of gone off on a path where I was trying to model the way everybody was telling me I should be as a CEO or, you know, as a leader. And I just wasn't even listening to myself anymore because I was trying to be somebody else. And this experience just really reconnected me with the person that I am and the strength that I have. It's almost like you hear often, like you're given a gift, and if you don't, you know, if you don't use it, the universe intercedes, like you got to use your gifts. And like mine is a very, a particular one where I am very intuitive and I feel very sensitive, and I was ignoring all of that. And this helped me get things on track again, you know, and my business definitely was suffering from me not being me for many years. And then when this happened, I thought, oh goodness, this could be like, what's going to happen? Like this, how am I not going to work for 6 months? And things didn't go well with the business, but it wasn't irreparable. Like when I did get back to work, I got back to work the smartest way for me to be, which was just coming back to that center. And it really was in many ways just an incredible lesson for me to trust myself and to get into the space, you know, where I really can believe and trust. And that's, so the rituals are such a big part of that. Like, you know, now I do some Qigong and some, you know, guided visualizations. I follow Dr. Barry Morguelan at Energy for Success and writing my goals and, you know, and really calling out when my mind starts to be mean to me and say, you're not good at this. You're no, you know, all the, those kind of talkings. I just take that out and go back to, what am I doing? Where are my goals? What do I want to have happen today? And I just feel like I've, you know, the business has grown tremendously. Like we'll probably double or triple this year. And I think a lot of it is due to being alive again in many ways, like just from an energetic perspective.
Hearing you say, find the light in resistance. Mm-hmm. And the second part, you know, find your own power. For all of us, we need to definitely pay attention to that. And it's so important. But let's move us to just a couple of other questions that I have for you. And by the way, I'm so glad that your husband is doing better. And I'm so proud of you, for the strength that you're conveying, not only for yourself and your family and your husband, but for all of us, true role model. And a couple of questions relative to trends, you know, in your industry. What are you spotting relative to chocolate and sustainability, for example?
You know, I think in chocolate, you're seeing a lot of no refined sugars happening, you know, people wanting cleaner, less processed. That's a definite trend. A huge trend in sustainability is just trying to get rid of this plastic film that chocolate bars get wrapped in and many, many foods get wrapped in. I think we're getting close. We're getting closer to a solution. But that to me is a big global one that we all need to figure out so we can stop polluting these oceans with plastics. People also are really looking for special experiences. I want to feel a little bit lavished and treated also. Like I don't want to just buy grocery store food, if you will. I want to have specialty foods. And obviously that's, you know, my place where I play, but
I think people are craving something really lovely like that to have around them.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. And then in terms of biggest opportunities,
I believe some of the biggest opportunities are globally, like I said, in luxury gifting in the Middle East and even in some in Europe and in Asia. And I think e-commerce, that, you know, we've just really had a consumer behavior shift in like trusting the website, the online world, for some consumers who didn't, now that's how they're shopping. And I think more and more people are doing it that way. So I think having a really strong digital presence is is key. And, you know, that, and I think, you know, the whole Zoom phenomenon has been really interesting because it's a way of kind of emotionally, sensorially connecting digitally that wasn't a norm before. So I have done a ton of virtual tastings with people and walking them through. And in some ways, it may even be better than live in some ways, because you're so up close and personal, like the way, you know, my face is very close and then the chocolates are very close. And yet it's still sort of fluid, like it's, you know, back and forth dialogue. And I think that's been, you know, kind of cool. And I don't think it's going away.
Yeah, I'm so with you on that. That's a good thing that's come out of this global pandemic and doing more virtual settings. What's one of your favorite Vosges things to gift and why? I love to ask that question.
Oh, gosh. Oh, there's so many. Well, if they had never had anything, I've always would send the exotic truffle collection because it's like a perfect sampler of a little bit of the, you know, the beginning of where we started, which was with truffles. And then I would probably send like one of the cool rituals for, you know, maybe for self-love or peace, just to give like a little taste of the soulfulness of the brand and how to use it in a very different way. The parcel box is really nice too, because it has a little bit of everything. And then the seasonal collections are great because, you know, we're very much like a fashion house in that we do new packaging for every season and it's a limited edition collection. And they're usually really, really unique, you know, sourcing stories and stories in general. And so that would probably be my third choice, but it's a hard one to answer.
You're going to laugh at this, but sometimes when I want to relax and, you know, just kick back once in a while, I actually go to your website. I just admire. I'm sure you've had other people say that. Admire the beautification of, you know, all your packaging and your products and looking, and just, it's like you're going through a storybook. And so I really find it fascinating. And then of course you want people like myself and others to always end up after visiting that they buy the product, right? But lastly, I wanted, you know, one last question for you and then I'll let you go. Where do you get your inspiration and energy from?
I tend to have a lot of interesting things around my house because I'm inspired by so much. So then I'll put like pictures up and just tape them up on a wall and they're just like visual inspiration. And so then when I go to like try to solve like, oh, what should I do next? Like I kind of just find the answers around me. I'm still very tactile. So I like to touch things and not just see things online. Online is cool too, but I really go deeper when I touch. So, you know, books and old LPs, I just trust that it comes to me in the moment. I don't overthink it.
That's a good thing. And it brings us back to our original title for this podcast of How Chocolate Can Raise Your Vibe. And thank you, Katrina. And thank you everyone for listening. WEG is more committed than ever to serve and help women entrepreneurs and business owners grow their business global by allowing them to tell their stories about going global, share new ways to take on the world, get motivated, be inspired, and have fun.
To learn more about WEG, visit www.womenentrepreneursgrowglobal.org. Our host is Laurel Delaney. Audio engineer is Bob Maravich. Lead designer is Laura Fairman. The theme song was written by the women-owned company, What Up Pitches, and I'm your announcer, Lucy Brooks. Thanks for listening to How She Went Global.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Blue Dog Design, a growth consultancy that helps business and marketing leaders make the decisions that matter. In our complex world, building a sustainable future for your business, stakeholders, and the planet can be an enormous challenge. Blue Dog works with leaders to clarify what matters and make confident decisions together. With a 93% client retention rate, getting to know Blue Dog will be a good decision. Learn more at bluedogdesign.com.